Planet Earth is seen from space. An orange glow rises over the horizon. Shafts of multicolored light spring up from land masses, forming brightly lit continents. The word universal encircles the globe. Polygram Filmed Entertainment presents. Rubbery-faced, black-haired Mr. Bean runs an electric razor over his cheeks and chin. A working title production. He shaves up and down his cheek, then moves the razor up to shave his forehead, then down his nose, and on to his nostrils. In association with Tiger Aspect Films, Bean holds the razor under his mouth and licks it. He smiles at his reflection. A big red caption. Bean. The Royal National Gallery, London. In a meeting room adorned with portrait paintings, a dozen middle-aged men sit morosely around a long table, lost in their thoughts.
I suppose we could just fire him.
In his kitchen, Bean sticks paper tissue in his top pocket. He looks up at a clock that says 10 to 9. His face falls. He knocks a mug onto the floor, it shatters. He scans around for a replacement, nothing suitable. He's still holding a spoonful of instant coffee granules, which he tips into his mouth. He spoons sugar into his mouth, then swigs from a pint of milk, spilling some down his chin. He shakes his head rapidly, cheeks bulging.
Of course, we'll have to give him 3 months' notice.
Stuff of nonsense. Leave it to me. I'll talk to the chairman and insist on Mr. Bean's immediate dismissal. Now then, back to the agenda.
The Gresham Gallery of California has recently received a private donation of $50 million to spend on buying Whistler's portrait of his mother from the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. It is quite simply the most historic purchase made by an American gallery this century.
Grierson Art Gallery, Los Angeles. Mr. Grierson outside.
It's as simple as this. The greatest painting ever by an American artist is returning at last to America. From now on, Whistler's mother lives right here in Los Angeles, where she belongs.
When will we actually see her?
The unveiling will be in about 2 weeks, and you're all invited.
They've asked us to send a scholar of great weight and substance to preside over the ceremony and stay on for a couple of months of lectures and seminars. Dr. Rosenblum, Dr. Cutler, you both hold high claim on this great honor.
The chairman's here, sir.
Excellent. Send him in. Oh, run and fetch Mr. Bean, will you? We're about to fire him.
Marvellous.
Yes. Mr. Bean is the worst employee in the gallery's history.
Bean sits slumped on a chair in one of the high-ceilinged exhibition rooms in the Royal National Gallery. He's asleep, arms hanging limp at his sides. Still sleeping, he leans forward on his chair and comes off it, landing hunched on his knees. He slowly keels forward, his head banging onto the wooden floor, his feet lifted up behind him. The chairman arrives. The men in the meeting stand as he enters.
Good afternoon, sir.
Sit down.
Now, before we move on to the major business of the day, I should like to broach the question of Mr. Bean. Now, Mr. Bean has worked for us for many years.
And will for many years to come. I employed this splendid young man when I was doing your job, Charles. And you can have my resignation if you go anywhere near him.
The other men stare back, stunned. Bean sits in an office in his grey uniform jacket. The gallery secretary is at her desk. Bean taps his nose, then reaches inside his jacket for a white paper tissue, which he carefully unfolds. He blows his nose. The secretary looks over at him sourly. He goes to put his tissue away, then changes his mind and blows his nose again.
Oh,
The secretary looks at Bean unamused while he holds the tissue to his nose and jiggles his head manically. He pulls the tissue away from his nose. Some paper is hanging from his left nostril.
He's a fine young fellow.
Absolutely. Quite right. Very well, moving on. The Grierson Gallery of California needs a representative of our great gallery. They're looking for a scholar of the very highest standing. I have therefore decided to recommend for the post and the 3 months sabbatical that goes with it, that splendid employee, Mr. Bean. All those in favour?
Yes!
Excellent. Carried. Our loss is America's gain.
David! Got a letter from the Royal National Gallery. They're recommending a guy called Bean to represent them.
Bean? Huh. I can't say I've heard of him.
Well, a letter signed by Drs. Rosenblum and Cutler.
Well, that's impressive.
They say he's a man whose incontrovertible genius dwarfs our own meager talents.
Rosenblum and Cutler said that.
Well, you asked for England's top man. I do believe I delivered him.
Well, he certainly sounds like it.
Now, however, before we confirm, Bernice here still feels that we get more media attention if we had someone from, let's say, the entertainment industry.
I genuinely believe that we could get John Bon Jovi.
John Bon Jovi? Mm. To unveil Whistler's mother?
Yes.
I've nothing against John Bon Jovi. The man has had two great hairstyles in the last 10 years, which is an achievement not to be sniffed at. But so far as I know, Mr. Jovi knows absolutely nothing about 19th century Impressionism. Certainly hasn't mentioned it in any of his recent songs.
No, but David...
This is not a rock video. This is a great and serious work of art. And Dr. Bean will give the occasion depth and dignity.
Bean's photographed.
You're right. We go with Bean. No. David's our curator. This is David's call. It's his decision, his responsibility. Ultimately, his neck.
Bean Gurns.
And where do you want him to stay?
I have a rather interesting idea.
Here? In our house for 2 months? Oh, David, what? Suddenly there's no hotels in Los Angeles?
Okay, there's no need to get excited here. I just thought, you know, this is the Royal National Gallery of England's top man. I thought he'd be very exciting to have around, to learn from, and talk to. And...
So do we know anything about our new best friend?
No, I think they might have mentioned it if he was a notorious serial killer.
Are you feeling lucky, punk?
David, you know, we have an expression in this country. It's that over my dead body.
Allie.
I'd like to put it on the table right here and now.
This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it could be seriously great for the kids.
You're kidding.
Come on, it's gonna be great. Let's say there is a chart of the most intelligent people you've ever met in your life. Well, at number one with a bullet is Dr. Bean. Kevin, you know, sometimes you ask me questions that I can't answer.
Like what is an intrauterine device?
Well, I think more like what's the meaning of life.
I never asked you that.
It's fine. It doesn't matter. What I am saying here is that Dr. Bean is a very remarkable man. Hey, for all you know, he could be very cute.
Bean flutters his eyebrows.
Oh, come on, the guy is going to be a creep. All Englishmen are ugly. I just look at Prince Charles and weep.
Okay, so he's going to look like Meatloaf's butt.
Yeah, and that's if we get lucky.
Jennifer, no one is asking you to marry him.
You know, I don't know why we have these family conferences if Dad's already made up his mind.
Perceptive child.
Hey, what's wrong with Meatloaf's butt?
Oh, come on, everybody. It's going to be great. Dr. Bean is a genius of the very highest order.
Good evening. No, sir. You're in faction first class. Good evening.
Aboard a passenger plane, Bean sticks his tongue out and waves his boarding pass at economy class passengers. As he enters first class, a stewardess offers to take his coat. Bean swans down the aisle, holding his boarding pass up proudly and laughing to himself. A grey-haired businessman regards him unimpressed. Bean sits beside him. Bean relaxes back in his seat, smiling. He holds his legs straight out in front of him, waving his hand over them. He takes out a camera and snaps his fellow passenger. Bean smiles at the man who's stony-faced, a print of the painting Whistler's mother.
Good. Simple poster, nice and big.
It's actual size. A bargain at $9.99. Spencer?
Yes, sir.
Beth Town?
Yeah, pushing your luck a little here, Walter.
It'll sell. Whistler's mother's cookies. Chocolate chip. Whistler's father's beer mug. And here's a really cute one for the younger brother range. Whistler's whistle.
Yeah.
You just blow up a raft.
Bean eats sweets from a bag. His neighbor is reclined asleep in front of him.
Mommy, I don't feel well.
Bean offers the boy to his right a sweet. The sick-looking boy shakes his head. Bean tosses a sweet in the air and catches it in his mouth. The boy smiles. Bean points to his sleeping neighbor. Bean blows air into the bag, holding it over his neighbor. He claps his hand on it. The boy vomits into a sick bag. Bean, unaware of this, grabs it off him, blows into it, swelling the bag, then claps it over his sleeping neighbor's head. Fresh vomit flies everywhere. In the airport, stewardesses frantically try to wipe stains off the man's suit. Bean hides behind other passengers. David Langley and his family are waiting with a sign reading, Dr. Bean.
Any second now. Think we're looking for a Brad Pitt lookalike.
Standing on a moving walkway, Bean smiles oddly and tilts his head. Up ahead, he spots two airport policemen chatting. He stares at their holstered pistols. He purses his lips, his eyes wide with excitement. Smiling and raising his eyebrows, he reaches inside his jacket, pretending he has a gun. The cops notice him, and he freezes. The police advance on him. He turns away from them and tries walking backwards on the moving walkway, getting nowhere. The police study him. Bean runs for it. Bean hurtles through the crowded airport, pursued by the cops.
Police! Everyone on the floor! Now!
Not you, sweetie.
Oh, right.
Bean jumps back up. Four airport police train guns on him.
Carefully take out your weapon, holding the butt with two fingers only. Slowly place it on the floor and take three steps back.
At gunpoint, Bean trembles. His hands shake violently as he reaches inside his jacket. The cops stare at him sternly. He pulls his hand back out of his jacket, two fingers held out forming an imaginary pistol. He lowers his hand to the floor. A mean-looking black police officer, Lieutenant Brutus, sits opposite Bean. He checks inside Bean's passport. He holds the passport up, showing Bean's face contorted in the photo inside it. He stares at Bean. Bean gurns, folding out his lower lip and crossing his eyes, like in the photo.
Mr. Bean, are you presently on any kind of medication?
Not that I know of.
Well, you can certainly use some.
Bean smiles back at him. In the lounge of their modern home, David and his family face Bean, who sits knock-kneed on the sofa. A large bowl of multicolored sweets are in front of him.
So, Doctor?
Bean.
Yes, okay, Dr. Bean. Well, you made it. Nice flight?
Bean jiggles his head, rolls his eyes around, curls his lip, and shrugs.
Well, this is Kevin.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And this is Jennifer. She's been very excited about meeting you. Uh-huh. My wife, Allison.
Bean waves to her. She has a smile frozen on her face.
David, could I just have the tiniest talk with you in the kitchen?
All right, yeah. Just got it.
They head into the kitchen. Bean peers after them. Allison is tense.
I appreciate that on first viewing, he seems a little eccentric.
David, there are Martians who have been exiled from Mars for looking weird, who look less weird than this guy.
He has an original quality.
He goes time... today.
Waggling his tongue, Bean picks out a yellow sweet and tosses it high up in the air. He sways beneath it, before catching it in his mouth, then chewing on it.
Wow, that was amazing. It's really cool. Hey, can you do this?
He pulls his eyelids back.
No, but I can do this.
Neat! Wow, how do you do that?
Oh, magic.
Okay, so you're going to tell
yes.
him today?
Yes, today. Today seems like a good day.
Bean scurries into the kitchen, puts on a green crocodile-shaped oven glove, and opens the oven door. He pulls out a pair of white Y-fronts and drapes them over his arm before attempting to close the oven door. David and Allison just stare at him. David drives with Bean.
Well, sir, an unorthodox start. I guess I never expected things with a man of your caliber to be normal. I gotta confess, I've never actually read anything you've written. Tell me, Doctor, what exactly is your position at the gallery?
I sit in the corner and look at the paintings.
Ah! That is brilliant! If only more scholars would do that, you know, just sit and look. You know, not lecture and write and argue. Just sit and look at the paintings themselves. Now that is brilliant. Yeah.
At the Grierson Gallery.
Yes. Morning, Elmer.
Good morning, sir.
Dr. Bean?
Oh. You'd like to sign in, sir?
His tongue wagging out of his mouth, Bean signs paper on a clipboard.
Thank you. Welcome to the Grierson, Dr. Bean.
A stylish modern building. David holds the door open and motions Bean to enter.
Welcome to my world. Expect it in Grierson's office at 9 a.m. Now, this is a man who does not like to be kept waiting. So if you... okay, absolutely. You bet. All right.
In a gent's toilet, Bean stands at a urinal. He zips up his trousers. He checks his face in a mirror and examines the wash basin taps. He moves the handle left and right, but no water. He lifts the tap handle and water spurts out. The crotch of his trousers is soaked. He grabs two sheets of paper from a dispenser and rubs his trousers vigorously. There's no more paper. He spies a hot air dryer on the wall, hits the start button, and arching his back, standing on tiptoe, he tries to position his wet trousers in the stream of air. He leaps repeatedly. He positions a metallic waste bin against the wall, stands on it, and gyrates in front of the dryer. He looks round, smiling. Holding onto the wall, he thrusts his groin closer to the dryer. Walter appears and watches open-mouthed. Keeping his eye on Bean suspiciously, Walter turns on a tap at a basin. Bean suddenly notices him, stops gyrating, and pretends to examine a light fitting. Bean unscrews a large light bulb and toys with it. Walter washes his hands, fails to find any paper to dry them, and shaking his hands, exits the men's room. Bean juggles with the hot bulb, and it smashes on the metal bin.
Doctor, we should make a move. We're very late.
Bean nods, shaking his hands manically. He turns on a tap and soaks his trousers again. David paces in the corridor. Bean pokes his head out of the men's room, tiptoes out and grabs a brochure. He holds it in front of his crotch.
Oh, when you're ready. Okay.
Bean scampers after David, still holding the brochure over his crotch area.
Ah, David, finally!
Grierson, Bernice, Walter.
And this must be our professor from across the sea.
Yes, George Grierson, this is Dr. Bean.
I'm delighted, Doctor.
Actually,
Dr. Bean, can we get a photo, please, sir?
Right there. We heard a great deal about you, Doctor.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I expect a great deal of you.
And this is Bernice, in charge of PR.
An absolute honor, Doctor.
All right, thank you. And Walter Huntley, our merchandise manager.
Nice to meet you.
Moving along. Take a seat, Doctor. Here, let me take that old thing. This is very out of date. Thank you. Before we settle in, you might want to feast your eyes on these.
Grierson walks over to an oil painting depicting a countryside scene with men on horses. Bean follows David, hovering only inches behind him all the way. David looks startled. Grierson's bemused.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Bean. I like this.
It's beautiful, sir. Mm. I think it is, yeah.
Mm. Over here.
Okay.
Bean shadows David closely as they walk to another painting. Grierson eyes Bean suspiciously. David examines the painting. Bean's goggle-eyed.
It's lovely green there.
Oh, good. Done business. Okay. I've asked Bernice to run through the order of events for the opening. Dr. Bean, would you like to join us?
No, I'll just...
Very well. Bernice?
Now, you will note that anything pertaining to special media requirements is prefixed with an asterisk, i.e. glossy stills requested by some of the favored weeklies, that sort of thing. Right. So, the big day unfolds as follows. Our generous benefactor, General Newton, will be arriving at 10 a.m. to meet the members of the staff. Then at 10:30, we'll have the unveiling of the picture. Now, this will be in front of all press and media.
Walter, I'm assuming all this merchandising is going to be made available.
Oh, absolutely. From fridge magnets to frisbees, we'll be ready.
So, it will probably be at about 11 a.m. when the stage is set for Dr. Bean.
Yes, all right, really. Really should bring in the doctor here.
Bean prances in front of a revolving fan, his arms held out at his sides. Above him is a poster depicting Whistler's mother.
Dr. Bean?
Bean finally turns to face Grierson, his trousers no longer discoloured. He sticks his hands in his pockets and proudly bulges his trousers out at Grierson.
Doctor, we've just been inspecting the schedule, and... if you would just like to take a look at yours right over there at your convenience. The general should be arriving at 10 a.m., and he'll unveil the picture at 10:30. So at about 11 o'clock, we should be ready for your speech.
Yes, and I think 20 minutes should be long enough. Don't you, Bernice?
Absolutely. I know you could fill hours, Doctor, but for the press, it would be best if you could keep it quite light. Maybe throw in some anecdotes about the actual painting of the picture, and explain why it is considered to be America's greatest painting.
Is that going to be enough, Doctor? 20 minutes?
Bean fidgets and nods.
Well, dear friends, if you'll excuse me, I have a lunch with the mayor. Not the kind of thing I like, but duty calls. Well, Doctor, it's good to meet you. It's a complex experience. Enjoy your stay with David. They're simple people, but warm. David, if I may have just a private word.
Okay. I tell you, why don't you wait for me back at the new acquisitions? I'll join you shortly. Oh. Yeah.
David joins Grierson. Bean, hands in pockets, heads off, watched by the two men.
He's a genius, right?
Yeah, he's eccentric. But
yes.
Grierson sits on a table.
The unveiling of Whistler's mother is the most important thing to ever happen to this gallery. And Dr. Bean was your choice.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you, sir.
Grierson stands, pats David on the arm, starts to walk out, then stops and turns off the fan. In David's car.
Dr. Bean, when we get home, I wonder if you would mind giving me a private moment with my wife. There's a little something we need to work out.
No problem.
Bean has reclined his seat, so he's now lying horizontal in the car. Allison's mixing food in the kitchen.
Yeah, I think just wait in here would be good. Oh, just ignore that. Her mother gave it to us. Huge sentimental value, you know, so... just make yourself at home. I'll be just a couple minutes with Allison.
On the wall is a large photograph of David holding a dog. Bean plays with a newfound glass swan.
Oh, doctor, I would actually not do that. That's a limited edition. It's that it's delicate, so if you... put it there would be good. Yeah. Okay, that's...
Bean sticks the glass swan on a CD player. Allison's operating a food mixer.
Hi.
Hi. Now, Dr. Bean?
Well, actually, no, he is still here. But let me...
Jennifer?
What is, you have luggage pack? What is plan B?
Plan B is, if you haven't gotten rid of Dr. Bean, you go straight to Grandma's.
I can't believe you threw it up again, huh, Dad?
Oh, come on. There was no time to raise the subject.
Kevin, start the car, would you, sweetie?
Oh, Allie, wait a second and look.
No. You look, David, my darling. I have asked very little from you, but I did ask you to get rid of Dr. Bean, and you have made your choice.
Yes,
so you two can stay here and really come to grips with postmodernism. But I am taking our children to my mother's.
Just give him one last chance.
Oh,
just
David,
one.
Please. Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks. Once you get to know him, I think then you're gonna...
Don't.
She shows him her palm. She forces a smile. Bean's operating a remote control.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
No, Doctor. That is not for the TV. That's for the...
He flipped the glass swan into the picture, shattering both. Outside, Allison speeds off with the kids. Bean and David wave goodbye.
Yeah. Well... There they go.
They stand beside a lilac-coloured garage door in the sunshine. Bean's arms hang by his sides.
Well, Doctor, we got the whole weekend together. Yeah. Get to know each other and,
I was thinking tomorrow we might really do L.A. There's the Gallery of American Indian Art. There's the California State Gallery. There's actually this new place, the Rabowitz, which is kind of the place for abstract expressionism. Does that sound good to you?
Bean waggles his head.
Maybe you have something else in mind?
Bean stands up in David's convertible, pointing excitedly at a big wheel. The Pacific Park Amusement Park. Bean waves David to follow him in. Two men wear green caps styled to look like crocodile heads. Bean laughs. The Sea Dragon Ride. Bean, now wearing a crocodile-style hat, dips into the huge bucket of popcorn carried by David. Bean points to a sign reading, The Ride of Doom. It's frightening. His face contorted in excitement, Bean waves David to follow him in. Inside, they sit in chairs that tilt and buck while a screen portrays a fantasy rollercoaster ride. Unimpressed, Bean looks around and yawns. David is laughing, sitting next to him. On screen, an extreme rollercoaster ride, seen from the perspective of a rider.
Incredible. You said?
Bean spots machinery in the control room behind the ride.
Why don't you get another ticket? It could be more fun second time round.
Bean looks round furtively and creeps over to the controls. Banks of buttons, switches, and lights. He reads notes on a clipboard, takes out a small screwdriver, and examines the machinery closely. Seated, back for the ride.
Okay.
Brace yourselves.
Bean fixes David with a wild stare as the lights dim. The ride starts, the chairs buck violently, throwing people around. Mayhem. People are sent flying out of their seats while Bean, grinning, clings to his with both hands. A man grabs at Bean, who shoves him away. Bean sits in an interrogation room. A uniformed cop paces behind him. Gun, handcuffs, and nightstick hanging from his belt. The door is opened and the cop departs. Bean breathes a sigh of relief and looks around the room. Behind him on the wall, there's a large mirror. Bean looks behind him and smiles at himself in the mirror. He stands in front of it. He adjusts his red tie and stands admiring his reflection, hands folded. He jiggles his head from side to side. He hops from side to side and then jerks violently as if trying to surprise his reflection, and again. He wiggles his backside. He's watched by police through the one-way mirror.
He's a genius, huh?
That's what they tell me.
Bean plays air guitar, contorting his face, making windmill guitaring moves, sticking out his tongue.
Well, it looks like a fruitcake to me.
Bean prances, playing air guitar.
You willing to take responsibility for his actions?
David shrugs. Bean suddenly leers through the mirror.
Well, you're a braver man than me, and I single-handedly take on gangs armed with AK-47s. Get him out of here. Tell him his is a butt I would dearly love to kick. And the next time I will.
David's house, Bean irons underpants.
Doctor, there is something we have to talk about. And I don't quite know how to put this. What I am concerned about is whoever that is, I am getting rid of them.
Grierson and his wife Sylvia are outside.
There he is.
David, sorry we're late. Traffic. Oh, terrible. You couldn't believe
it. Every day. Worse and worse.
It's just the way she... It's green.
And nobody's in control.
No, it's the yellow. It's the yellow. She isn't. Well, where is Allison?
Well, I've got some bad news and some good news. The bad news is that Allison has had to go visit her mom, who, well, is not well.
That's too
bad. Dear, poor thing.
Sorry to hear that, David.
The good news is that Dr. Bean and I will be cooking.
Oh.
Sure, that's good news.
Well, of course it is. All the greatest chefs in the world are men. So what's on the menu, maestro?
Oh, what the hell are we going to give them? Yes, I think they may be expecting something slightly more formal.
Bean replaces two frankfurters in the fridge.
Onion? Just on its own? No, no, don't be ridiculous. That's for Thanksgiving. Allison would kill me. No, no. It must be something else.
A huge turkey.
Have you ever cooked one of these before?
Oh, yes.
I mean, would it take like 5 hours, right?
Not necessarily.
They squash the turkey into a microwave, and Bean jams the door shut, holding it with his foot. He jabs at buttons.
What do you think? 20 minutes?
I don't know. Okay, you sure this is going to work? Okay, you're the chef. Just put on some vegetables and come and say hello.
Wearing a makeshift chef's hat, Bean enters the lounge with food on a wooden board.
Maestro, my taste buds are positively tingling with anticipation.
Bean proffers a chopping board displaying slivers of raw onion stabbed with cocktail sticks.
Oh, no thanks.
I think we'll pass on the appetizer.
So, Bean, big day Tuesday. Your big day, my big day. I have a question for you.
Bean looks concerned and staggers off back to the kitchen.
He's very attentive to detail. Everything must be just so.
An explosion from the kitchen. Gobbets of raw turkey splatter on a window. Bean's hat, made out of newspaper, sails through the air. Later, Bean sits covered in turkey, chewing on a morsel. David sits staring at him.
Bean? I think we need to be honest with each other. I cannot deny that over the last days, some suspicions have begun to gather in my mind, and I would just like to ask you some direct questions. Okay? Number one. Are you a doctor?
David's eyes narrow. Bean looks down. He shakes his turkey-splattered head. David nods.
Number two. Do you know anything about art? just for instance here, was Leonardo da Vinci an American basketball player?
David smirks to himself. Bean rolls his eyes up and ponders, his mouth hanging open vacantly. He looks back at David and smiles.
Yes.
David nods in disbelief and looks down, resting his head on his hand. The door opens, and into the messy kitchen come Allison, Kevin, and Jennifer.
Hi, Dad!
Hi, Dad!
Hello, Doctor!
Hi, Dad!
Hi, Dad!
They turn and walk back out. David sits frozen, his hands held out in front of him. Later, the lights are turned out. Yesterday. David sits in darkness on the edge of his bed, staring into the distance. Morning. Lying in bed, David rubs his face with his hands. David closes the frosted glass door to a shower room and slumps against it. He sits wearily on the edge of his bed. He reaches back to pull his green top off over his head. He steps into the steamy shower room and closes the door. Mist covers the frosted glass. Bean's face is pressed up against the door. The two men wrestle naked in the shower. Bean reaches out to answer the phone.
Hello? I'm Mr. Gerson, yes. He's just here in the shower with me.
Yes, hello, Mr. Gerson. No, you must have misunderstood him. What can I... She is? Oh, thank you for calling me. Yes, okay, goodbye.
Bye.
David drives at speed, smiling broadly.
I can't believe it. Whistler's mother has actually arrived in America. Now listen, I am begging you, as a man whose entire professional career depends on you, behave rationally today.
Bean has a cigarette lighter up his nose.
There is no God.
At the gallery, the two men slowly push open double doors and enter an exhibition room. On the far wall hangs Whistler's mother, an oil painting depicting an old lady sitting. A bronze-coloured frame surrounds the picture, which hangs on a red wall. David's mouth hangs open. Bean peers curiously. The creased face of an old lady represented in oil.
What do you think?
David stares wide-eyed in awe at the picture.
Nice frame. She's magnificent. David, well done. Worth every bright green buck.
She's something else, isn't she?
All right, folks, enjoy her while you can. After this morning, we lock her away until the guy who paid $50 million for her turns out. And, Elmer, I believe we have a security meeting.
That's right, sir.
And this is your key to the encasement system. There are only two. I have the other one. So if the painting turns up missing, I'll know where to come. And if you could all join me at the security console...
Doctor, why don't you just stay here? Maybe a look at the real thing will inspire you for your speech.
Please just stay here. Don't leave this room till I get back, okay?
Bean peers after David, who scoots off, leaving Bean alone. Bean scans around the exhibition room. Potted plants flank the solitary portrait. Elmer stands in front of a highly detailed chart.
This chart maps all the security elements for the big day. And as usual in these circumstances, I've given the operation a code name, which is Operation Whistler's Mother. It's not a snazzy title, but I think it works.
Bean strolls around in front of the painting and scrutinizes the frame. He runs a finger along the ornately carved frame and taps on it. He runs a finger down its side, examines dust and tuts. He blows at the painting, and his nose crinkles as if he's about to sneeze. He holds up his hand. He taps his nose and gulps. Suddenly, his body convulses.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Whistler's mother has been splattered with saliva, which dribbles down. Bean retrieves a white handkerchief from his inside pocket and dabs at the face in the painting. There's now a huge blue stain over Whistler's mother's face. Bean examines his hanky, which is stained with blue ink. Bean trembles and shakes. From his pocket, he produces a leaking blue pen. His face shakes. He scurries to close the double doors. He presses himself against them.
Fear not, gentlemen. With the system we've put in here, nothing will touch that painting short of an earthquake that brings down the whole gallery.
Bean holds up the painting, staggering under its weight. His knees bend and he sinks down, setting the picture on the floor. He untucks his shirt and spits onto the bottom of it. He then spits onto the painting and rubs his shirt onto it. The painting pops out of its frame. Bean tramples on it. Trapped inside the frame, Bean twirls, trying to extricate himself. Bean balances the frame on the floor, but it topples over. He jigs around on the spot, staring down at the picture. Pictures hung on the wall. Bean appears, holding the picture out flat in front of him, under a white cloth. As if wheeling a trolley, Bean passes the man, making trolley noises. At the end of another corridor, a man is pushing a real trolley. Bean looks up at the ceiling. The man follows his gaze. Bean tilts the painting to squeeze past the trolley. A sign on a door reads, "Employees Washroom." Bean ducks inside.
Once we've gotten the general safely inside, the key figure security-wise will be Dr. Bean. We've got to protect the painting without getting in the good doctor's way.
In a utility room stocked with tools, Bean fixes the portrait upright in a vise. He explores metallic shelves, examining various containers of liquids. He finds a tin of lacquer thinner, smiles and taps on it. He grabs a cloth. He tips lacquer thinner onto the cloth and dabs gently at the blue stains on the painting. He checks the cloth, which is now stained blue. The ink has come off the painting. Grinning, he rubs more. He smiles at the now cleaned up painting and takes the tin of thinner back to the shelving. He turns back to face the painting and is aghast. Where he dabbed, the oil paint is now bubbling. Bean shakes his head and panics. He gibbers and shakes uncontrollably in front of the painting. He starts frantically wiping with a cloth. The cloth smears the image of the woman, and he wipes away the oil, leaving a large yellowy splodge where the head once was. He waves his hands helplessly in front of the painting, then grabs his head. He drags his hands down his cheeks, scattering museum visitors in his wake. He races down a corridor with the painting and into the exhibition room. He drops the painting on the floor, covered in a white sheet, then hurriedly closes the double doors behind him. The door handles wiggle and the door bulges as people try to get in. Bean lugs over a potted plant and barricades the door with it. David enters by another door.
Seems to be a problem with the door.
David looks over to the empty wall where Whistler's mother had been hanging earlier. Bean trembles, looking sheepish. David turns to him, his mouth poised to form a question.
Where's the picture gone? What?
Bean gingerly picks up the picture from the floor and drops the cloth to reveal the portrait, with a cartoon head freshly scrawled over the damaged area. David recoils.
Oh, Jesus! God!
David rushes to close the door he entered from.
Why am I worrying about this? You did it! All I have to do is go out and tell them what happened. Perfect. And they'll say, well, who left them alone with the picture? And I say, me. And they say, well, you're fired. I say, fine. No, 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 no. Then they say, firing was not enough. Let's prosecute you for negligence. Then I go to jail. My wife leaves me. My daughter becomes a prostitute. I wind up on death row, sharing a cell with Butch McDick. Calm down. I just gotta calm down. Okay. Okay. Give me one more look at the painting. I got him! Oh, got him! Got him! Got him!
Which renders the underground ventilation ducts completely secure.
Yes, well, that's good to know. Thank you, sir.
In the exhibition room, David pushes a button, and the painting glides backwards into the wall and is covered over. David retrieves his security card. Elmer sits in the security room, checking monitors connected to security cameras. David holds his head in his hands.
Hey, do you drink, Bean?
No.
Good. Neither do I.
In a windowless bar, David and Bean sit glumly drinking, Bean decorated with cocktail umbrellas. Bean twirls one of the umbrellas in his mouth. Above the bar, a football game on TV.
Down the line.
Bean.
Bean chooses another nut from a bowl. The TV channel changes to a program with sheep. Bean sways, two cocktail umbrellas sticking out of his hair.
Carry on. You want to know what the reality of the situation is?
Mm.
Okay. This is it. Because you moved into my house, my wife has moved out. Yes, she did. She might have moved out anyway, but that is 1.1. Point two. I've given my life to art. And from here on in, the only art I will get anywhere near are the pictures I draw on the pavement, hoping passers-by will throw nickels in my hat. I guess the long and the short of it, I wish I'd never been born.
David pulls an agonized face, throws his hands up, and slumps face down on the bar. The two men stagger down the middle of an empty street.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here.
They hold hands.
Suddenly,
I'm not half the man I used to be.
No.
There's a shadow hanging over me. I believe in yesterday.
Suddenly.
A full moon shines down.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. If you see a crocodile, don't forget to scream. Ah!
Splish, splash, splash, splash.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. If you see a crocodile, don't forget to scream.
Allison opened the door.
I can explain everything.
Okay, explain everything.
David's mouth hangs open.
It's inexplicable.
David, the reason that I came home was because I missed you. And also because I live here, and they live here. But David, we have been waiting for 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And what do we get? A drunk and his friend from the planet Zog.
I know, and it seems like this horrible situation, but if you could just hear my full horrific tale.
David, I think I'm gonna have to leave you.
You are?
She nods.
Well, things really have gotten bad.
He leans against the wall for support.
Yeah.
David lies curled up asleep under a blanket on the sofa. Bean sits at the dining table. Bean, wearing a white shirt, glumly sucks on a straw inserted into a carton of milk.
Hi, Beanie.
Kevin wanders into the kitchen. He goes to the fridge.
Can't sleep, huh?
No.
Me neither. Can't stop thinking about naked women. What about you?
Whistler's mother.
Well, whatever turns you on.
Kevin selects a blue sweet, lobs it up, and catches it in his mouth.
Get you around, Moon Man. Oh, if you still can't sleep, come to my room. I got some great posters of Cindy Crawford on my wall.
Bean sits frozen, his mind racing. Bean's in the bathroom searching through a cabinet full of medicines and toiletries. A bottle of laxative. Bean sniffs liquid in a clear glass bottle. He jams a hairdryer into his waistband. He delves around inside a roomy pair of white wife fronts and nods. He squeezes his head into a black polo neck sweater. He descends stairs with a suitcase. He tests a manual food whisk. Also assembled in his case, a box of eggs, the crocodile-shaped oven glove. He dons yellow rubber gloves and selects a small wooden brush. He grabs a flashlight from a glove compartment and exits the garage. At his feet, a skateboard. He launches himself forward on the skateboard and wheels out onto the road, dressed in black, wearing yellow gloves, the suitcase strapped to his back. The Grierson Museum lit up at night. A yellow rubber-gloved hand grips a wall. Bean peers round. A security guard sits in the control room, sipping coffee and reading a magazine. He suddenly looks up. The guard marches out of the control room. Bean creeps out, wearing animal-shaped oven gloves on his feet. One cow, one crocodile. From the laxative bottle, he spoons, then tips brown powder into the guard's half-drunk mug of coffee. Frantically, he stirs it in. On a wall of keys, Bean grabs the key hanging under a label, Men's Room, and switches it with another. He then scoots off. The tired-looking guard slumps back in his chair in the control room and drinks his coffee. In hiding, Bean checks his watch. The guard looks queasy. He grabs the key under the Men's Room label and races off, clutching his stomach. Bean watches him go, picks up his suitcase and scampers past the now empty control room. The guard tries to jam the key into the lock on the Men's Room.
Come on!
Bean collects a rolled up poster, checks it and smiles. The guard runs back towards the control room. Bean appears prancing on the floor above, and then arrives at the doors to the exhibition room. The guard rips all the keys off the wall. Bean pops up with the folded wife fronts wrapped around his head. He fixes the torch into the cloth and turns it on. The guard drops handfuls of keys. Bean sticks David's security card into the slot, and the protective wall covering slides up. Monitors in the control room show the guard scrambling around on the floor and Bean unhooking the painting. Bean sets the damaged painting on the floor and runs a pizza slicing wheel around the edge of the canvas. He chews on dozens of sticks of gum. His chewing slackens and he bloats out his cheeks. He pulls the gum out in one long strand, attaching it to the inner frame of the now cut-out portrait. He rolls out a poster of Whistler's mother across the frame. The guard kneels in front of the Men's Room door, struggling with the lock. He suddenly clutches at his backside. Bean carefully separates egg yolks, collecting the egg whites in a bowl. Adding other clear liquid from small bottles, he whisks up the gooey concoction. With a brush, he coats the poster in it and runs a hairdryer over it. He blows on the muzzle of the hairdryer. Meanwhile, the guard bashes at the Men's Room door with a fire extinguisher. Clutching his belly, the guard keels over. Bean watches the metal wall covering slide down and dances with glee. Bean skateboards away from the museum. The guard rushes into a toilet cubicle. David wakes on the sofa and plucks a cocktail umbrella off his face. He checks his watch. A leather-clad biker spins his motorbike to a halt in front of the house. Jennifer runs out to climb on. David gesticulates from the balcony.
Jennifer! No. Don't think for 1 minute you're getting on that bike, Jen.
Morning, everyone.
Total family rule here. No one is allowed on one of those death traps. You promised me, Jen.
And you promised Mommy get rid of Dr. Freako.
Bean checks mail from the mailbox. The biker wheelies away. Bean waves. David drives fast through morning traffic, grim-faced and wide-eyed. Bean smiles smugly beside him and rubs his hands together.
Don't talk to me. I am trying to think what I'm going to do.
Bean flutters his fingers and strokes his face before turning back to David.
Well,
quiet!
Bean rolls his head, still smiling. On a high terrace, a flag is hoisted up on a pole. A sign reads, Mom's Home. The flag unfurls. It's a representation of Whistler's mother. A vintage black limousine flanked by soldiers on motorcycles arrives at the Grierson Museum. A TV crew is filming. David drives up to the museum. A distinguished-looking officer in dress uniform alights from the limousine. Grierson shakes his hand.
What a pleasure, sir. Welcome to our humble abode.
Not too humble, I hope. I'm expecting much.
Of course. Gentlemen.
After you, sir.
General Newton enters. Bernice hands David and Bean laminated name tags.
Glad you could make it.
Where the hell have you been?
I am sorry. Trouble at home.
Oh, never mind. Come along. General, I'd like you to meet our curator, David Lang.
I'm delighted to meet you, sir.
Of course you are.
Right through here, sir.
The exhibition room. Grierson stands before the metallic wall covering that conceals the portrait in front of a seated audience. Bean grins gleefully beside a deeply worried-looking David.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a great moment for America. And for one very special lady, Whistler's mother.
Bean claps, holding his hands horizontally, switching them.
And she's here today thanks to our great and good benefactor. Will you join me in saluting a soldier, philanthropist, loving father, and an extremely generous patron of the arts, General Newton.
General Newton bows.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I am not a traditional art lover. I don't know the difference between a Picasso and a car crash. But I love my country. I can't stand the idea of a bunch of Frenchies owning America's greatest painting. Let's get on with it.
Walter hands the general his security card. David watches, face quivering. Newton sticks the card in the security panel slot.
Welcome home, Ma.
The metal covering rises. Internal metal gates open. Dry ice spills out of the aperture. Through the mist, Bean's doctored poster appears in the place of the original painting. David's mouth widens with relief and joy. David looks at Bean, who gives him a double thumbs up. Grierson shakes Newton's hand.
Whatever you did, you're a genius and I love you.
It's a poster.
David, it's time.
It's time for what?
The speech.
What speech?
Congratulations, David.
And Dr. Bean's speech about the painting.
Yes, of course, the speech.
Bean trembles.
Now, Doctor, try to keep it below an hour. And if there could be one joke in it, that would be nice. Good morning, America. Couldn't give a flying monkey about isms and, you know what I mean.
It doesn't have to go on for long.
Just, Dr. Bean, we're ready for you.
Just write this. Just.
And now for the second highlight of our day. Dr. Bean, the great English art scholar, is here to speak for a few minutes, not too long, Doctor, on the subject of our new purchase. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bean of the National Gallery of England.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bean stands in front of Whistler's mother at a glass lectern. He smiles awkwardly at his expectant audience.
Hello. I'm Dr. Bean, apparently. And my job is to sit and look at paintings.
The audience nod and clap. Bean looks bemused.
What have I learnt that I can say about this painting?
David watches, his lips quivering.
Well, firstly, it's quite big, which is excellent. Because if it was really small, you know, microscopic, then hardly anybody would be able to see it, which would be a tremendous shame. Secondly, and I'm getting quite near the end now of this analysis of this painting. Secondly...
Bean looks at David, who shrugs.
Why was it worth this man here spending 50 million of your American dollars on this portrait? And the answer is, this picture is worth such a lot of money because...
Goggle-eyed, Bean stares blankly at David.
It's a picture of Whistler's mother. And as I've learned by staying with my best friend, David Langley, and his family, families are very important. And even though Mr. Whistler was perfectly aware that his mother was a hideous old bat who looked like she had a cactus lodged up her backside, he stuck with her and even took the time to paint this amazing picture of her. It's not just a painting. It's a picture of a mad old cow who he thought the world of. And that's marvellous. Well, that's what I think.
A standing ovation. Newton shakes Bean's hand. They pose with Grierson for photographs. Bean mugs for the cameras. David shakes his head, smiling broadly. Grinning, David clasps Bean's arms and shakes him. A transparent security case descends in front of the painting. At the back of the room, Lieutenant Brutus strolls in.
Overdrive.
Where did you put the original?
Brutus's hand on his shoulder.
Mr. Lang, may I have a word?
Stay here. Hey. Shut up.
And Mr. Lang.
Okay, I can explain everything.
What can you explain?
About the painting.
Which painting?
Whistler's mother.
I'm afraid, Mr. Langley, I'm here in my capacity as a police officer, not as an art lover. It's about your daughter. She's been in a motorcycle accident.
David looks stunned. David and Bean follow Brutus's car as it speeds through traffic downtown. Bean waggles his fingers nervously in the passenger seat. David's face is tensed. A traffic light changes to red. Both cars swerve past other vehicles. Brutus suddenly spots a carjacking.
Damn! Request emergency clearance for 809 Adam. 211 in progress. Suspect male, possibly armed. Request immediate backup.
Keep speeding! If you get a ticket, I'll tear it up.
Thanks.
Hold it!
Hey, easy, fella, easy. Hold it. All right? Hey! Easy. Put it down. Put the gun down.
David rushes into hospital.
Hi, I need a Jennifer Langley's room. She came in about 11 o'clock. Motorcycle accident. Got it.
Bean's shoved aside by a policeman. From a gent's toilet, the security guard from the Grierson staggers out, hunched over. Bean covers his face.
She's on the fifth floor east wing. Just take the elevator up.
Oh! Just...
Bean backs into David, who stumbles over trolleys and crashes to the floor.
I'm so... Just... Please, just stay here and do nothing. If you do nothing, nothing can go wrong. I've got to take care of my family now.
David shows raised palms. Bean nods and watches him stride off through swing doors, which slowly close. In a private hospital room, Allison sits by the bed of unconscious Jennifer, holding her daughter's hand. Jennifer is bruised and bandaged.
The nurse says that it's not a coma. That she's just sort of taking time out. But we haven't seen a doctor yet, so I don't...
David stands at the foot of the bed. Bean sits in the busy hospital reception area.
Dr. Jacobson?
Yes?
We need you urgently in OR3.
No, can do. I'm doing number 4 at 1.
Sir, it's urgent. We have a ruptured kidney and massive bleeding.
Okay.
He drops the stethoscope. Bean picks it up off the floor and follows the doctor through a door marked Emergency Staff Only. In an operating room, medical staff attend to a patient.
Yes, it's urgent. What's happening? The surgeon's on his way up.
At last, Dr. Bean.
Hello, doctor. We've got a 45-year-old male with type B negative brought in by paramedics 10 minutes ago.
He's got a penetrating injury to the left chest.
Yes.
Bean is dressed for surgery.
Gotta get him in there right now.
Doctor, it looks like a bullet in the lower thorax. Seems to have ruptured the lung and there's severe inner bleeding along the abdomen.
Doctor, he's coming too.
All right, give him a T-70.
Got it?
The patient is Lieutenant Brutus. Bean gives him a thumbs up as Brutus looks up groggily. Stunned, the lieutenant drops back unconscious again.
Shall I extend the incision, sir? We've taken it from the breastbone to the diaphragm. We may have to extend further to get to the spleen.
Bean grabs a scalpel.
Sorry, sir, it's only my first week.
Oh, you're right, doctor. We should wait for the x-rays.
Help! We are losing this guy out here! We need help!
They run off, leaving Bean alone.
Watch he doesn't go into hemodynamic shock. We'll be right back.
She closes the door. Bean wears a blue medical gown, face mask, hairnet, and rubber surgical gloves. Through the window, he watches a medical team clamping defibrillator paddles to a patient's chest. The patient jerks violently. He turns to the unconscious Brutus. He fishes in his pocket for a packet of sweets. He selects a yellow one and examines it. He throws the empty sweet packet on the floor, tosses the sweet up, and watches it bounce off his mask into the cut-open chest of Brutus. Bean sags and sticks a gloved hand into the opening. Brutus's face twitches. Bean delves deeper. He extracts a small silvery nugget.
What's that?
He taps it on a stand and points at what he now realizes is a bullet. He squeezes the bullet back into the wound. Brutus's mouth twitches around his respirator. Bean peers inside the man's chest, now sticking both hands in. He gropes deeper and produces the bloodied yellow sweet. He drops the bloodied sweet into a small tube of water, which he shakes, swishing the sweet around. He takes a pair of medical tongs and carefully plucks the freshly rinsed sweet out. Bean lowers his face mask and gobbles the sweet. He clamps and unclamps the tongs. The surgery team pour back in.
Where are you waiting, sir? Nice work in there, people. Now back to the bleeding. Where's this blood coming from? We gotta clamp it off. Where the hell's that J-17?
We need that J-17 in OR4 right
now.
We
got a major trouble.
There's too much blood. I can't see a thing.
VMS is working over 20.
More suction.
Crazy bleeding. Somebody check that line.
Pressure's bottoming out.
Okay, hook me up at 12. Give me a now.
His heart rate's dropping. We're gonna lose him.
Let's move. 14
gauge. How's the TMS?
Come on, people. He's crashing on us.
Yeah. I'm not getting a reading.
Where is this fool?
Hang in there, fella. Come on. Hold on to him.
We don't find it. He's a dead man.
I am not gonna lose this guy.
He's slipping.
Sir, we're losing him. I've got to get in there now.
Bean reaches inside the exposed chest.
Well, Doctor, you can't just... Oh, it's too dangerous!
Bean rummages, rolling his eyes up and narrowing them. One nurse stares down, wide-eyed in alarm. The rest watch nervously. Bean produces the bloodied bullet.
Stabilizing. Blood pressure's climbing back.
Bean raises a blood-stained finger and nods. They pat him on the back. One nurse swoons. Bean hastily replaces his surgical mask when David finds him in a corridor.
Oh, Doctor, thank God my daughter was in an accident. No one's even taken a look at her yet. We're desperate for some medical attention in here. Would you mind?
Shielding his face with his hand, Bean follows David into Jennifer's room.
Don't worry, honey, the doctor will check her out.
Oh, thank God.
A nurse hands Bean a clipboard of notes.
Mr. and Mrs. Langley, any kind of damage to the brain is a very sensitive thing to observe, so maybe we should just step outside and give the doctor a little room to work.
The first nurse said we shouldn't think of it as a coma, but more like a deep sleep.
Yes, that's sort of true.
Could I ask you a question?
Bean's ears pricked up when she said deep sleep. They've gone outside, leaving Bean alone with unconscious Jennifer. He bends down and gently shakes her.
Jennifer, wakey wakey, breakfast ready. Jennifer.
What time is it?
It's almost 2.
Can you turn the clock back about 12 hours for me?
Sure.
Bean jumps up, pulling faces. Jennifer lies still. Bean replaces his mask and shakes her again.
Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
I don't know what to say about Bean. He's clearly a Force 10 disaster area, but... God help me. I like him.
Bean wields defibrillator paddles.
Now, having said that, there is no reason in the world why any of you should ever have anything to do with him again.
Bean clamps the 2 defibrillator paddles onto Jennifer's unresponsive body. There's no power. The machine control is dead. It's unplugged. Bean scans around and spots electrical sockets supplying a TV. Slinging the paddles over his shoulders, Bean carries the control unit across the room. He plugs the unit into the wall socket. The screen flashes into life. He passes the paddles past his ears. He defibrillates himself, flying backwards and landing on Jennifer, who wakes.
Mom! Dad! Anyone!
Jennifer! Oh, honey!
Sweetie!
Oh, look at you!
You had an accident, honey, but everything is going to be okay.
What happened to Stingo?
Oh, just a bruises, collarbone. He'll be fine till I get my hands on him.
Oh,
hey,
hey,
Doctor, where are you
think
going?
You're going. How can we ever say thank you? No, you've made us so happy. Tell us, what can we do? We'll do anything.
Bean slowly pulls down his mask, revealing his anguished face. David's face drops. Jennifer's mouth hangs open.
Well, I suppose you could let me stay another week.
Stunned, Allison looks back at David, and then to Bean, who jiggles his head. David drives the streets of L.A., the roof down on his convertible.
Sunset Boulevard.
Rolling down, pure highway.
Bean takes photographs from the car and grins. A sign reads, Sunset Boulevard. Mounted policemen ride on the sidewalk. Bean takes a photo of himself, mouth gaping open.
Roll down the window.
Bean stands up in his seat, giving a double thumbs up. He lunges across David, trying to take a photo. The car swerves as David pushes Bean away. Bean snaps a bearded biker in shades and gives a thumbs up. A sign reads, Beverly Hills. They drive along palm tree-lined boulevards, Bean waving his middle fingers at shocked Americans. David's aghast. At the Langleys, Bean presents the family with wrapped gifts.
What's this song?
I love L.A. This is a hefty bag.
Something
very
exciting indeed.
What's all we got here? Oh, look, accident.
Yeah, a whole box of.
Oh, hey, there they are.
Eggs. Six of them.
Barbie.
Kevin comes out dressed as a miniature Mr. Bean. Kevin gives Bean a double thumbs up. Kevin presents Bean, dressed identically to himself, in a red and blue top, sawn-off jeans, and a decorated baseball cap. Bean sneers.
Give us a smile.
Bean forces a weak smile. The family wave down at Bean from the terrace. Bean climbs into David's car.
See ya.
Bean waggles his middle finger.
Farewell!
At the airport, Bean carries his suitcase into the departure lounge. He stops and looks down. David pats him on the back.
Well, Beanie, it's been surreal. I want you to know you can come back and visit anytime. In the fairly distant future. I know it sounds insane, but I'm really going to miss you.
David leans in to hug Bean.
Okay.
Bean twitches nervously, not hugging back, and walks off. A tap on David's shoulder. It's Bean, who clumsily hugs him, squeezing him hard around the midriff. Both men laugh.
Okay. Bye again.
Bean brushes himself down. David waves. Bean collects his suitcase, looks back smiling, and disappears into the airport crowds. A passenger jet flies in an orange sky. England, nighttime. A train rattles past semi-detached housing. There is a light on in one bedroom. Framed photographs on the wall of Bean with the Langley family. Bean in bed checks his alarm clock, then glances at his teddy bear. He mimes hypnotizing the bear, flaring his palm over its face. He snaps his fingers, and in his other hand its head lolls back. He lays it down gingerly on the pillow next to him, and curls up next to it in his striped pajamas. He turns off the light and lies back in bed. On his bedroom wall hangs the original defaced Whistler's mother, complete with the smiling cartoon head. Bean nods to his teddy and smiles. Bean closes his eyes and, smiling, rests his head back on the pillow. The end. ITFC audio description.
Feeling I had nowhere to go. I was alone. How was I to know?
guess I normally stay till the end as well. Bye. You can go now if you wish. Oh, dear me.